to the sixth case, the United States versus Tishnar. Mr. Auerbach?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Simon Auerbach, and I represent the defendant appellant, Mr. Christopher Tishnar. We're here today. We respectfully request that Mr. Tishnar's sentence be vacated and remanded without application of the career offender sentencing guideline for two reasons. The first reason is that we believe, as applied to Mr. Tishnar, the career offender sentencing guideline is unconstitutionally vague. The second reason is because we believe the Sentencing Commission, in adopting its current definition of a crime of violence, it's exceeded its authority that was provided by Congress. Mr. Tishnar is a man of ordinary intelligence, and at the time he committed his underlying offense in this case, there was no way for him to be on notice that his two prior convictions would cause him to be catapulted into the career offender status category. And without having notice of that, a constitutional issue can be raised. And I think, in reviewing the transcript between Judge Barker, she wasn't entirely convinced that the career offender sentencing guidelines should be applied. Judge Barker went through Mr. Tishnar's predicate offenses, the offenses that got him into the career offender category, which were dealing, I think, 49 grams of marijuana and resisting law enforcement. And Judge Barker recognized that she had to designate him as a career offender, even though his prior predicate offenses were, I believe the language she used, were relatively insubstantial. And with regard to resisting law enforcement, there's been a lot of discussion about Sykes, and it's one of Mr. Tishnar's predicate offenses. But in the Sykes case, Mr. Sykes drove on the wrong side of the road. He drove through yards containing bystanders. He drove through a fence. He crashed into a house. And here, Mr. Tishnar's flight was substantially less. And earlier today, this Court entertained argument about the Armed Career Criminal Act, the ACCA, and the ACCA, you already knew, and it was repeated that the language of the Career Offender Sentencing Guideline tracks the language of ACCA. And you're also aware of the great difficulty district court judges, circuit court judges, and the Supreme Court have had in interpreting exactly what a violent felony is. So in this instance, when we have Mr. Tishnar and we have an issue of notice and providing notice, we'd ask that with regard to Mr. Tishnar, the career offender sentencing guideline be declared void for vagueness.
Didn't Judge Barker give a below-guideline sentence here?
Yes, sir. Yes, Your Honor.
So since the guidelines are not binding, I guess I have a little trouble understanding how they can be unconstitutionally vague.
It is, after Booker, it is true that the guidelines, and this Court has repeatedly held that the guidelines are, or at least in two decisions identified by the government, that the guidelines are not binding, but judges do follow them.
But Judge Barker didn't do that here. Instead, she did, it seems to me, she did what we all are supposed to do under 3553A. You're entitled to look beyond, for example, the category of the crime. You can't do that under ACCA, but you can do it under the guidelines, as we've said, so that, in essence, the district judge is free to look at the severity of the actual underlying conduct and adjust up or down as the judge's wisdom and discretion would direct.
Correct. That is correct. And I would concede that by a point, and she did a downward departure, but it still gave Mr. Tishnar, I believe, 43 to 70 months more on his sentence than if the career offender guideline had not applied to him. So even though she departed down, if the career offender guideline was not applicable in this case, he still received a substantial number of years added on to his sentence.
You agree his sentence is within the statutory framework?
Correct. Mm-hmm. And the second argument regarding the commission, the sentencing commission exceeding its authority when it adopted its current definition of a crime of violence. Congress mandated or directed the commission to develop a guideline, and it also gave it a definition for what to use as a crime of violence. And that was fine for 2 years, but then in 1989, the commission completely revised what constitutes a crime of violence and adopted the language that's in the Armed Career Criminal Act. And while I'll concede the commission has broad authority to develop policies and procedures regarding federal sentencing guidelines, I do not believe that it has the authority to wholesale rewrite a definition that Congress specifically requested be included.
Is the guideline sentence or the guideline definition inconsistent with 18 U.S.C. Section 16?
I don't believe it's not inconsistent. It's just different.
So why isn't that sort of a reasonable interpretation of 16 by the agency that has been directed to provide a workable definition? I mean, 16 looks a lot more vague than the guideline definition. So
it could be a reasonable interpretation, but my position is that if Congress tells you to do A, then you need to do A, and that even though it has authority, it doesn't have authority to change the definition. And it seems that even though on its face it might appear to be less vague, 18 U.S.C. Section 16, I don't think I don't know this for sure, but I don't think it has led to the litany of Supreme Court cases trying to figure out what crime constitutes a crime, a violent felony under the Armed Career Criminal Act.
How do you handle the fact that counsel below withdrew the objection to classifying the Fling Firm police conviction as a crime of violence under the guidelines?
During the sentencing, counsel withdrew the objection, but because the right to appeal that issue was preserved in the plea agreement, the applicability of the career offender designation, we believe that the standard review remains de novo.
But isn't a predicate of appealing it actually presenting it to the sentencing judge?
I'm sorry about if
I, in order did, to it did preserve the right to appeal, but in order to appeal, don't you first have to present the issue to the sentencing judge?
But I believe it was presented, respectfully, it was presented to the sentencing judge.
But then withdrawn,
correct, Your Honor.
And your position is that that should have no impact on the scope or extent of our review?
It is my position that your review should remain de novo.
Why is that not waived, Mr. Albright?
Because one of the predicates for Mr. Tishner to enter into the plea agreement was to preserve the right to appeal this issue. And I don't think orally withdrawing an objection during a sentencing hearing constitutes rewriting.
It's kind of interesting because the counsel preserved the motion to suppress and to dismiss, right? So it kind of seems to buttress the argument that there was an abandonment of the other position.
I just don't think, Your Honor, I'm see that I'm...
That's right. You'll have rebuttal time.
I just don't think that in entering into a written plea agreement and then attending a sentencing hearing by what orally is done by counsel can not eviscerate but modify what the party is, what are the bases for entering into a plea agreement.
But you agree there is no challenge raised below on the vagueness.
I agree that there was no explicit challenge to vagueness. Right. Yes, Your Honor.
Better save some time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Auerbach. Mr. Cook.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, counsel for the defendant. My name is Brant Cook, and I represent the government in this matter, as I did in the district court below. The district court committed no error in applying the career offender designation to this defendant, and his sentence should be affirmed. This court has previously held on two occasions that the guidelines are not susceptible to vagueness challenges. A holding in United States versus Brierton in 1999, this court held that the guidelines are not statutes, but are merely directives to judges for their guidance at sentencing, and that the guidelines are not designed to address citizens at large, as opposed to statutes that govern criminal conduct or prohibit criminal conduct. This court held in Brierton that vagueness challenges are inapplicable. This holding was reaffirmed in United States versus Idowu in 2008. Now, the defendant now asks that this well-settled, long-standing precedent be overturned. It's the government's position that there is no basis to do so, particularly where, post-United States versus Booker, the guidelines are now advisory. The penalty provisions for Mr. Titchener's crimes here, the armed bank robbery, the discharging of a firearm during the course of a crime of violence, are set forth in statute, 18 United States Code, Section 2113D for the bank robbery, 18 United States Code, Section 924C for the use and firing of that firearm. The court in Brierton noted that the guidelines placed discretionary limitations on a sentencing judge, and that even where those discretionary limitations were in place pre-Booker, that vagueness challenges were inapplicable. I would submit that the request of the defendant to overturn this law makes very little sense when these quote-unquote discretionary limitations have actually been reduced to mere advice in several holdings of this court post-Booker. District judges are free to vary up or down so long as there is reasonable basis to do so, as in fact the court did here, finding that though career offender did apply, that in this particular case with Mr. Titchener, his offenses were relatively minor as compared to some others, and that he was due a downward variance. Now, even if the guidelines were subject to vagueness challenges, the fact of the matter is that the career offender guideline was not vague as applied to Mr. Titchener. Several months prior to Mr. Titchener's offenses of conviction in this matter, this court held very specifically in United States versus Spells, assisting law enforcement by vehicular flight, the precise crime that Mr. Titchener had a prior conviction for, was a crime of violence for the purposes of the career offender guideline.
You'd agree that there's room for reasonable debate about that.
I would agree that
like
there's
5-4
room for...
in the Supreme Court.
I would agree that there has been some back and forth, yes, Your Honor. However, Seventh Circuit precedent, as governed Mr. Titchener, he living in the Southern District of Indiana under the Seventh Circuit, was very clear that under United States versus Spells, that resisting law enforcement offense was a crime of violence. Again, just a couple months before his offense of conviction.
So that if he wanted to calculate his sentencing guideline before he did the bank robbery,
yes,
he could have figured this out.
Mm-hmm. Yes, one could say. Regarding the authority of the Sentencing Commission, as the court's aware, the government cited in its brief United States versus Rutherford, particularly note 11. This argument has been raised to this court before quite a long time ago and rejected. This court found that the Sentencing Commission, based on other directives of Congress, did have discretion to use a definition of crime of violence other than 18 U.S.C. 16. I would also note, while I know that it is not necessarily dispositive, but this change in definition in the guidelines occurred in 1989,
So for 22-plus years, the definition of a crime of violence, as revised by the Sentencing Commission, has stood with no other congressional action. There's really no reason, in the government's view, to disturb this longstanding precedent. I do ask the court to affirm. Finally, the court raised the issue of what is the applicable standard of review in this matter. It's the government's position that the standard of review ought to be plain error. And let me provide the basis for that. It is true that in the plea agreement, it was reserved for sentencing as the parties contemplated the pendency of Sykes v. United States, that the defendant preserved his right to appeal the designation of a career offender. An objection was then made, particularly along the lines that Sykes was dealing with, and that objection was withdrawn following the Sykes opinion issued by the United States Supreme Court. Regarding the vagueness challenge offered here, because it was not offered in the court below, but there was the note in the plea agreement that these things may be appealed, the applicability may be appealed, I think that we are in a stance of being looking at plain error review.
Because it was not the government waiving the waiver?
Your Honor, I think in this particular case, when we look at this court's precedent regarding waiver, this court has previously held that a waiver has to be very, very specific. I would suggest that when Mr. Titchener, through his counsel, withdrew the objection to the career offender on the basis of the Sykes decision, that was waived. I believe that was waived. As to these other issues that were not presented to the court, I think that there's at least room for there to be a plain error review here. It is the government's position, though, that there is no error in any event. So the government does request that the defendant's sentence be affirmed. And if there are not any further questions, I'll rest on my brief.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. Mr. Auerbach?
Thank you, Your Honors. Very briefly, Judge Hamilton asked if Mr. Titchener, prior to robbing the bank, if he could have figured out, calculated his sentence, and the government answered affirmatively yes. I'd respectfully disagree that despite this court's order in Spells, which was in 2008, we got all the way to 2011, and we got a 5-4 by the Supreme Court, and there were circuits going all over the place. So I'm not sure it's as crystal
clear. He also would have had to know that he was going to fire the gun, right?
Mm. Yes, Your Honor.
And not hit anybody. Mm. All of that winds up, all those unpredictable things have huge effects, right?
Yes, Your Honor. So. And then with regard to Brierton and Idua, they broadly speak of general principles of not allowing constitutional challenges to the sentencing guidelines, but those specific guidelines that were an issue there are vastly different than the ones here. Specifically in Idua, there was a clearly improbable standard that the court was asked to interpret. And after saying Brierton doesn't allow void for vagueness challenges to the guidelines, the court went on to say, if it did, federal district court judges deal with clear error and they deal with probabilities. We know exactly what clearly improbable means, and so therefore there would not be a vagueness problem here. And I would just submit that this situation is vastly different based upon the various opinions stemming with the Armed Career Criminal Act. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thanks to all counsel. Mr. Auerbach, I want to extend on behalf of the court a thanks to you and your colleagues and your firm for accepting the appointment in this case.
It was our pleasure to be able to present to you. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.